You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Alan Young. One of California's most prominent figures during the pandemic is stepping down. Dr. Mark Galli is the state's Health and Human Services Secretary. He was the driving force behind California's response to COVID-19. Dr. Galli was a regular public face and voice, at times holding daily press conferences alongside Governor Gavin Newsom to explain the state's public health decisions that impacted the lives of roughly 40 million Californians. Today is Dr. Galli's last day. Governor Newsom appointed Kim Johnson as the incoming CHHS secretary. She's currently the director of the California Department of Social Services. She begins her new post tomorrow. Although Dr. Galli's 5 years in Newsom's cabinet is largely marked by the pandemic, his agency touches a wide range of how the state shapes the well-being of Californians. Insight host Vicky Gonzalez has interviewed Dr. Galli over the years and sat down with him last week to talk about his experience leading the agency.
Dr. Galli, thank you so much for taking the time.
Gee, thank you for having me.
You know, what a ride. I mean, you were brought in 2019. 2019 kind of feels like the end of an era. You know, there's life before 2020 and life post-2020, because, of course, our lives as we knew it changed dramatically. Before we dive into the pandemic and COVID-19, I'd actually like to start with your background. Why were you suited to become California's top doctor?
An excellent question. I think the most important feature of my background is just work in some of California's most complex, largest urban counties, and spent many years with the Department of Health Services in all sorts of work, not just the direct clinical care in hospitals and clinics, I did that, but also overseeing behavioral health programs at the intersection of physical health, our foster care clinics, jail health and juvenile health, homeless services. We started something called Housing for Health, which was one of California's first programs that really looked at this very important link between getting people who are sick housed as a way to impact their health outcomes, not just their homelessness status. So all of those activities, events, experiences, and passions, I think, put me in a place when I first met with the governor about taking this job that made it clear that there would be some of those experiences that would translate.
Yeah, I mean, you're stepping down after 5 years, which on paper isn't necessarily a long stretch of time, but your tenure encompassed such an extraordinary and unprecedented stretch of years. When it comes to COVID-19, I remember reporting on the first handful of cases in the U.S., two of which were in California, and this was back in January of 2020. But here at home, the risk of this new coronavirus was believed to be low, according to health officials. Of course, it was flu season as well. When did you first become aware of COVID-19 as secretary? I would imagine it was before January of 2020. And was there a specific moment when things shifted for you, when you became really concerned as the top public health official?
We first started hearing bits and bits at the end of December over the holiday season. And when we came back really full on work in early January, it was part of our everyday consideration and what was happening in Wuhan in China. Because California stepped in and accepted the first repatriation flights out of Wuhan in China, and we brought them here to Southern California, it was on our radar more frequently and in a deeper way than other states. And I'll remind you, other states with equally robust military bases refused to take these flights. And that, I think, gave us almost a head start on thinking about it those early days in January and February, where we were on with the CDC when no other state was talking to them about what is the model. Come to find out, we didn't have a model for what was to come. And we worked with them over weekends and nights to craft those first models projecting what would happen with cases in California and beyond. So I think we took it more seriously and became worried because of what we saw in Wuhan and because of how I think the experts who had some experience with pandemics or understood them and studied them were worried. And so we took that very seriously very early. And I think that gave California a bit of a head start compared to some other states.
Was there something in your career previous to becoming the secretary that you think adequately prepared you for guiding some 40 million Californians through COVID-19 in a pandemic?
Never been asked that, and I'm not sure that I can point to one thing. I think really the first piece would be just understanding how government worked and how we worked with partners and communities. Most of my work before this job was that, figuring out how to make government programs effective in community spaces, communicating around them, collaborating with folks to make it happen. And those skills certainly came to play. I mean, there was a lot that I learned very, very quickly about California as a result of the pandemic. I would hold almost weekly calls with supervisors from rural counties because I understood urban California pretty well, but rural California, not at all. It's easy to say, almost cliche-ish to say, you got to know what you don't know and start figuring that out quickly. And I feel like those experiences in other environments that I took on in prior roles gave me the foresight to ask those questions and make those connections. And, I'll just say a debt of gratitude to those mayors and leaders and county supervisors in rural counties who met with me a lot to teach me and give me the perspective of how we manage the pandemic, not just in big city California, but across the entire state.
You also explain these decisions on a daily basis at the height of the pandemic. I mean, normally, I would think prior to 2020, the public doesn't normally see the California Health and Human Services Secretary a whole bunch, but you were a regular face, you were a regular voice, you were regularly reported on. How did you prepare for that? I'm sure you didn't necessarily anticipate the amount of news coverage you would be a part of when you accepted this position, let alone, about a year into being the secretary.
So it's not something that I was certainly trained for. I don't know that many people in public health and health services were, but it certainly felt like one of the most important things in my time that I was asked to do and felt privileged to do, and always tried to do it in a way that made it relatable. I remember spending lots of time talking about my own personal experiences, whether it was with my kids or my mom, and really explaining it from the lens that I know I would appreciate if people did, which was try to make it as plain and simple as possible, connect it to real life experiences, and explain how they're are a lot of unknowns, but clearly some risks that Californians needed to understand to be able to make the kind of decisions about their daily lives in those many, many months.
Yeah, and those decisions oftentimes limited Californians' lives. And of course, you and Governor Newsom, the administration, would tell the public it was for the greater good, ultimately to save lives during the pandemic. But of course, there were vocal groups who pushed back for a variety of reasons. You had parents that wanted children to play youth sports. You had some industries, hairstylists, nail salons, some small businesses that felt that they were unfairly limited compared to other industries. Now that you're a few years out of this from the height of the pandemic, how do you view that criticism now that you're not in the thick of it anymore?
We set out in California to save lives. That was our number one priority. Stay home to save lives. Every version of the message was about saving lives first and foremost. And with that anchoring what we did, I'm really proud, despite the voices, which I always understood. I mean, to hear an official tell you abruptly that a business practice you have to put food on your table was going to be interrupted and disrupted for a period of time, that's unsettling. So I always appreciated a chance to get on with industry leaders and business owners and parents and families. I did lots and lots of Zooms. I mean, what the public saw was about 5-10% of the work to talk to people and communicate and work through decisions and really decide, is this in the aggregate, the right decision to make for our state at the time. And some of my favorite questions by reporters, I don't know if any came from you, Vicky, but I will say by reporters were when they would say, ask me a question a few months in or even a year into the pandemic. And they would say, well, Dr. Galli, that contradicts what you said 2 months ago or 3 months ago or last year. And of course it did. We learned a lot very, very quickly. Thank God for the science and the data and the transparency that not just California, but other states shared to make better and more thoughtful decisions over time. So I take the criticism to get back to your question. I understand where it comes from. And I believe that so many Californians, whether they say it out loud or it's just a private thought, are really proud to be in a state that prioritized saving lives. And that's what we did. And the data shows it. For a big urban state, we had one of the lowest, if not the lowest, aggregate death rate from COVID in the nation.
Yeah, I remember one time when interviewing you, I think it was in 2021 or 2022. I think I asked you if you could go back to the height of the pandemic, if you would do something differently, knowing what you know now about how COVID-19 spreads. And I think you said something to the effect of, maybe you would have changed or relaxed restrictions to the outdoors, knowing what you know now. But now that we're in 2024, as you are well aware, there are still consequences to the pandemic that still affect us to this day. There's learning loss in K through 12 schools. I think of burnout and staffing shortages in healthcare, as well as other frontline workers who couldn't isolate and work remotely. With the extra years of hindsight now, what lingering impacts of the pandemic still keep you up at night?
No secret, father of four, the school issues are the ones that far and away give me something to reflect on and think about. I will tell you that as we sat making those earliest school decisions, even I, knowing that this might last not weeks, but months, didn't expect years like we had and didn't understand how quickly we'd figure out the impact of COVID on kids, and frankly, the lower impact overall on death of kids, how sick kids got. I know there are important symptoms and long-term consequences of long COVID and some of the inflammatory nature of COVID on kids that is not to be taken lightly. But overall, I think knowing what we know now about how the virus spreads, what it does, that to go back and really rethink what a smart school policy would look like to do something different for California's kids and families and communities, I think would be the major place of focus. And in part, why I feel like conversations such as this one are so important, because who knows when this knowledge is going to have to be dusted off? And are we going to do a good job documenting it and making clear some of the decisions that were made and how they played out, and how if we'd only known this or only asked that, maybe we would have done something differently?
Was there ever a time where you were concerned for your safety and your family's safety?
Sadly, yes. And on behalf of, I think, so many public health leaders and others who put themselves out there doing the best they could with the information they had, trying to put down their own personal biases and concerns. It was scary at times, needing to get escorted to things and having, law enforcement drive by your house to make sure things looked safe. Seeing your kids show up on social media posts with criticism, I mean, that's jarring to somebody who didn't necessarily see that as part of their career. And you do it anyhow because someone needs to, and it's worth it, right? And I'm really proud. I don't know what I'd be saying if something actually did happen to a family member. But I'm proud despite those risks of what we were able to do. And again, like I said, I do it again, knowing exactly what it meant and what we'd have to sort of get through.
We're now endemic when it comes to COVID-19, according to the CDC, and this was back in August, meaning that it's still here, obviously, but it is predictable from a public health standpoint. But of course, there's still surges and problematic variants better equipped at spreading and evading a vaccine. What is your level of concern with COVID-19 today compared to the spectrum of other contagious diseases? I think of influenza, norovirus, RSV, or even Mpox.
I mean, the way COVID spreads, you have to give it a great deal of respect and reverence. I mean, unlike some of the other contagious diseases that you mentioned, COVID is this squirrely, wily virus that mutates for a living. And so you have to continue to respect it and track it and pay attention to it. The fact that it's no longer novel in the same way that most people's immune system has been introduced to COVID gives us a huge advantage that we don't necessarily have the same level of worry. I will tell you, I will be not at all surprised if we are dealing with and asking the same question about another contagious threat down the road. This world is definitely getting smaller. You know, we're seeing cases of dengue in Southern California that aren't linked to travel. And because we are so closely connected, what happens in one part of the world is likely to happen somewhere else, especially with an airborne virus like what we saw with COVID. So that's a long answer to say, worried about COVID because of the way it spreads, but as worried, if not more worried, that we see something else that challenges this state and nation, you know, sooner than 100 years from now, as we sort of enjoyed that period of break from a pandemic between the early 1900s and the early 2000s.
Yeah. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. If you're just joining us, I'm Vicky Gonzalez, and we're talking with California Health and Human Services Secretary Dr. Mark Galli about stepping down from the position at the end of this month. His 5 years, of course, leading the agency, largely marked by leading the state through the pandemic. Okay, Dr. Galli, COVID-19 aside, your agency oversees a dozen departments, from aging to social services, child support, even the expansion of abortion resources in response to the Supreme Court overturning Roe versus Wade. You have 33,000 state workers under you. I mean, that's larger than some smaller cities here in California. There's a wide umbrella of responsibilities that you're in charge of. What did you prioritize as secretary? Where did you see the greatest need?
Just coming out of the COVID conversation, let me say one other thing. We saw early in COVID that it would be an accelerant for change. People say it differently, don't let a good crisis go to waste. We saw COVID as both the unmasker of inequities. We saw that in the data early and late. So who or what did we prioritize at the agency? I'd like to say we prioritized the people of California, especially those who are often overlooked and vulnerable. And we're there to fill the gaps and the needs. And people talk about a safety net. And I often say we want to lift the safety net up. We want to build programs, policies, connections between various departments that didn't exist before so that those we serve get what they need as soon as they need it and don't have to wait too long. And I think we did that in so many ways, a sense of urgency around things like behavioral health and foster care services. I mean, we brought back during the pandemic hundreds of young kids who were in out-of-state placements for one reason or another. We brought them home. We got them not in institutions in California, but we proved that through services and supports, we can get them with family that loves them. Not always their parents, often aunties and grandparents and neighbors, but we did that. And that set the sort of course, hardwired California into believing we can do things in foster care and reform our rate structures, which are happening now. That's just one example. I mean, we used what I always say is our greatest tool for equity, which is Medicaid, to really transform the system. The governor pushed me in the early days, well before COVID, and said, we're going to turn this thing upside down. We're going to make the connections between brain health and physical health stronger. We're going to use this as a way to connect the dots on some of the social services that just seem to float out there, disconnected from the rest. And that's what birthed CalAIM. And really, simply put, CalAIM transforms the connection between behavioral health and physical health in Medicaid. It helps us simplify some of the annoying, irritating administrative work, both for patients and providers within the system. And then really prioritizes what has been commonly known as social determinants. I like to call them social drivers of health, whether that's food or transportation or respite services or housing on that front. And no doubt CalAIM has made the connection between housing, homelessness, and health as strong in California as it is anywhere in the nation, prioritizing that work, understanding that it's hard to take care of sick people experiencing homelessness, and the most important service for that person is to get them housed. I can go on and on. You mentioned so much of it that I think has been such a privilege to help lay down the vision and not in a rickety way. And I think that over time, so much of this is going to be hard to unwind because it's just the way we do business now in California.
Clearly, this is still obviously, I can hear it from you, a big passion of yours working in this capacity with the state. So why did you decide to step down?
I mean, the easiest answer is family, right? I have lived in Southern California. The governor afforded me that privilege. My wife, Christina, runs the Department of Health Services in Los Angeles. And jobs like the one that I've had the privilege of having come with a lot of knowing, but sacrifice. And so it is probably one of the hardest decisions that I will have made because, as I said, it's sort of this pinch me job for people like me who really see government as the way to take on the sticky, tough problems of our state and the world. The other thing, and you alluded to this, these jobs are and should be all-consuming. You're talking about the lives and the systems that serve 40 million people in one state. Californians should expect all of us in state government to bring our A game all the time. You mentioned 30,000 plus employees at CalHHS. They are the heartbeat of that work, and they bring their A game. And I would hate to be in a position where, because of sheer exhaustion and other things, to maybe say, I can't do it today. So this state deserves people who serve it with everything they have. And I've had the privilege of doing that and feel like I have. And it's certainly time to let others who I know, like Secretary Johnson, come in and continue to lead with that same sort of fervor of vision and commitment that I know she'll have.
Right. Kim Johnson has been appointed to your position. She's currently the Director of Social Services, and that's the largest department in your agency. What advice do you have as she steps into this role come October 1?
Secretary Johnson, my friend Kim, is an amazing leader. We often talk about being silo busters at California Health and Human Services, and I like to think of myself as a chief dot connector between all of our departments and beyond. And Kim gets that to her core. I would say she's been one of my teachers on how to do that better and smarter. So my only advice to someone blessed with an amazing set of skills and insights and experiences is just lead from your heart and your brain. So Kim is going to carry that legacy. It's not filling shoes, it's bringing her own, and she's going to do an amazing job with that.
Before we let you go, where are you heading next? Can you tell us what the future holds for you professionally?
I wish I could. Some days, of course, you wonder what that will look like. You wonder if you'll be in a place to have even close to similar impact that I'll say, enjoyed over the last handful of years, but I'm not sure. I do know, and as you said, you sort of hear it in the way I talk about this. This is the work that I feel called to continue to work on. It can take different forms and the nature of it will be different. So I don't know specifically what comes next. probably after a little bit of haranguing kids on homework and really being attentive to their activities, I'll find myself in some sort of good trouble. But yeah, I expect to use the gifts I've been given to hopefully continue to promote this state and its amazing people and amazing resources.
Well, Dr. Galley, I know this was a very busy time for you as you round out your time as secretary. Thank you for taking the time here on Insight.
Thanks so much for having me. And I think we underestimate how hard it was to be a reporter during the pandemic, the burden on your shoulders to communicate and be clear and accurate because it mattered to people. So, just to you and your colleagues, thank you for always being kind and graceful with me. I appreciate it.
That was host Vicky Gonzalez speaking with Dr. Mark Galley, California's Health and Human Services Secretary, who finishes his tenure today. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Alan Young. We're back in just a moment.